Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Oregon's Secretary of State, Tobias Reid. He studied politics and economics at Willamette University and earned a master's degree in business administration from the University of Washington. He's worked at the U.S. Treasury and at Nike. He was elected to the Oregon State Legislature in 2007 and has served as Oregon State Treasurer since 2017, and this year became Oregon's 30th Secretary of State. Welcome to the Exchange, Secretary Reid.
Thanks, Mike. I'm excited to be here. I had the chance to visit Southern Oregon a few weeks ago and hang out with the excellent Jackson County Clerk Chris Walker and Josephine County and some other places, so I'm excited for our conversation today.
Well, I hope you had some good weather while you were here.
It was great. It was terrific.
So tell me about your job. How's it going so far?
Well, we are early on in an office that has seen a lot of turnover in recent years, and so I'm really pleased with the consistency and the focus that we've been able to bring. I really love the chance to be out in the world in Oregon, because this office has such an important role to play in the relationship that people have with government. We're going to talk about elections, I'm sure. We'll talk about audits that really focus on our job as a watchdog to hold government accountable. And we're really, I think, about making government work for the people we serve, for Oregonians. So this job is terrific in that sense, and I'm just getting started, so I have nothing but excitement.
Okay, well, let's start with the elephant in the room. The Trump administration has continued to defend this narrative that Trump won the 2020 election, and on March 25th, Trump issued an executive order titled, quote, "Preserving and Protecting the Integrity of American Elections," end quote. So let's start with that. Can you explain what this executive order is and how it could potentially impact Oregon's election process?
Well, I know we've only got a half hour, so I'm going to try to be concise about this. The first thing is that we do not need the federal government telling us what to do when it comes to elections. We run great elections in Oregon. We are safe, we are secure, we are inclusive. We make sure that eligible people have the opportunity to vote and hold politicians accountable. This executive order, which I believe is unconstitutional and will not stand, is intended to make it harder for people to vote. It's the opposite of what the title says, and it does not make any positive effect. In fact, the effect is to undermine security for our elections and engage in nonsensical, distracting sort of culture wars rather than doing the hard work of making sure that elections are accurate and secure and that people have the opportunity to exercise what is a right, not a privilege. We will do things when it comes to elections as we do other things, the Oregon way. We'll take these challenges on in the right way and make sure that we do this legally and effectively. And if the president persists in this, you know, we have no problem asserting our rights and working with the attorney general and taking him to court.
Okay, well, let me read an excerpt from this White House executive order, which is numbered 14248, and get your response. Quote, "Free, fair, and honest elections, unmarred by fraud, errors, or suspicion, are fundamental to maintaining our constitutional republic. The right of American citizens to have their votes properly counted and tabulated without illegal dilution is vital to determining the rightful winner of an election. Under the Constitution, state governments must safeguard American elections in compliance with federal laws that protect Americans' voting rights and guard against dilution by illegal voting, discrimination, fraud, and other forms of malfeasance and error. Yet, the United States has not adequately enforced federal election requirements that, for example, prohibit states from counting ballots received after Election Day or prohibit non-citizens from registering to vote," end quote. Secretary Reid, is that statement about inadequate enforcement true?
I heard a lot of rhetoric in what you read, and so I'm aiming it at the substance, not at you here, but I didn't hear any assertions of fact. This is a lot of rhetoric in that is not backed up by evidence or facts. In Oregon and across the country, there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. We run secure elections. backed up by signatures, by paper ballots that can be audited, which we do. And so the Constitution, which it refers to, is also very clear in saying that it's the state's responsibilities to manage elections. We do that. The federal government can intervene, of course, but they do that through laws by Congress, not by executive order. And that is, in fact, cited very specifically in the injunction that was issued by a federal judge enjoining this executive order. Our job is to earn the trust of voters and ensure the security and accountability. And this executive order goes in exactly the opposite direction, based on rhetoric, not on facts.
So what does he mean when he says illegal dilution? Is that a real or manufactured problem?
I don't know what that means, because there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. What we have seen is isolated incidents of people being registered to vote inappropriately, and that's where our system works, because we discover that and we fix that mistake. This is a result of an error when it comes to the automatic voter registration policy, an error of implementation. It was not their fault in the vast majority of those cases. We found them. We fixed those errors. I don't know what a lot of those assertions in what you read actually mean.
So how prevalent is the problem of non-citizens voting?
It's not very non-citizens voting. I misunderstood what you said. Is extremely rare. It's single digits. It's vanishingly rare. They're searching for the right phrase to use there. It does not have an impact on any election outcomes, because it is so rare and so widely dispersed. We take that seriously. One is too many. But it is not something that people should feel concerned about when it comes to the integrity of elections.
My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. We're talking about the process of elections in Oregon and the impact of federal policies. Secretary Reed, in Oregon, what's the Republican Party's position on the voting process and Trump's executive order?
I think you'd have to ask them. I can tell you what I think about it, and I think respectfully, that's a question that probably varies individual to individual. For me, the important thing is to remember that voting is a right, not a privilege. That we have a responsibility to make sure that every eligible person has access to that right, so that they can hold politicians accountable. And as proud as we are about our nationally leading rate of voter participation, we're at 75-ish%. We should be more concerned about people, citizens, who are not choosing to exercise that right and hold politicians accountable.
Right. Well, Congress is in this issue as well. They're considering a bill called the SAVE Act. Do you know what that is and how it will impact elections in Oregon?
I do, and I have heard some people say that the SAVE Act is sort of the congressional equivalent, or at least analog, to the executive order. There are some similarities there, and I am very much opposed to the contents of that bill, because it too would make it considerably harder for people to vote. There are example after example of that, and we can make that really, really clear for people. People amongst your listeners would be especially affected because of the requirement that people show up in person to register to vote with documentary proof of their identity. The good example there is the 80% of women who are married in this country who have chosen to change their name would have a substantially harder time presenting a birth certificate or a passport with a name that matches that way. And people will point to, well, you can get a passport, which is true, but that's an expense. It's $100+, which in my view amounts to something close to a poll tax, all of which is built on the fact that there is no evidence of a problem. This is a solution in search of a problem. And again, we got to come back to the reality that voting is a right in this country. There are a lot of people who sacrificed a lot for that opportunity. We should not be so casual about making that, letting that go away. The SAFE Act is, it should not pass. It has passed the House, as you well know. It should not pass the Senate. We should be making it more convenient for eligible people to vote and making our government more responsive to people.
Well, if the Republicans have a majority in both houses, how do you know it won't pass the Senate?
I don't know that, but I know that a lot of people are making the similar arguments to me, including Republican secretaries of state around the country. I was at a meeting of secretaries of state in Washington, D.C. a few months ago, and it was gratifying to hear some of my colleagues in other states making the same versions of the same points that I was just making to you about the inadequacy, the ineffectiveness, the lack of evidence on this. And that's, I think, just good evidence of how this should not be a partisan issue. This is not a question of red and blue, Democrat, Republican. This is a question of one's attitude about government, about whether we should be making it more convenient for eligible people to vote or whether we want to make that harder. And I think secretaries of state are, you know, well positioned and credible about the mechanics of voting and how difficult it is to run that well. They are saying this is unnecessary. This is counterproductive. We should listen to them, and the SAFE Act should not pass the Senate.
Well, give me a sense when you say they're saying, give me a sense of what percentage, a breakdown of what percentage of the secretaries of state are saying what you're saying.
Oh, I think it'd be hard for me to do the math on that on the fly, but there is a good number of secretaries of state of both parties in those meetings talking about the actual real world impacts of a policy like this. 50 states across the country, you know, have a lot of differences and also some similar characteristics. And thinking about people who live in rural parts of states having to drive hours and hours merely for the privilege of registering to vote, when again, that is a right. And it's not theoretical either. If you look at Arizona, who had a version of this play out, they now have essentially two different voter rolls, those who are eligible to vote in federal elections only, because they had essentially a state version of the SAFE Act, but it was deemed to only be plausible for state elections because it violated federal law. And so there's, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of voters who have not been eligible to vote. And the complications and difficulties of running parallel different voter rolls, none of this makes any sense. And again, in the face of no evidence of widespread fraud, voting has to be something we protect, not something that we give away.
Well, that's a good point. So in your responsibility as Oregon's top elections official, how can you safeguard our state elections from federal interference?
We are with the Attorney General. We are suing. We are asserting that this is an unconstitutional executive order that should not be allowed to stand. The federal judge in a different case has already enjoined this executive order. That's a different case was filed, and a judge stopped the executive order based on some other arguments. A different judge is considering the case that we filed with Washington State. So we're making our arguments. Meanwhile, we're focused on doing the work of running elections. There's an election on right now. In fact, these are the things that voters should be paying attention to right now. It's not, you know, it's flashier sometimes to think about who we're going to vote for president and Congress, but the election that voters right now are participating in are the line items on your tax bill and determining who's going to run public schools and the fire districts and what's going to be on your property tax bill. So I hope people are doing that. 23% in 2023 of voters in Jackson County turned out. I would love to see that number be higher this year. And of course, that makes every vote really important. So make sure you get your ballot in by Tuesday.
Well, given the circumstances and the challenges we're facing with possibly losing our right to vote, I think that people are more aware, more concerned, and will probably exercise their right to vote in greater numbers.
I sure hope so.
Okay, well, we have to take a short break. My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed. We're talking about the process of elections in Oregon and the impact of federal policies. So, Secretary Reed, I've lived in Oregon for 20 years, and the election process here is the easiest and most convenient process of any place I've ever lived. I think it's a model for the nation, isn't it?
I do, too. And I appreciate you saying that. You know, I think people who have lived elsewhere and come to Oregon really appreciate the fact that we recognize that, you know, people have complicated and busy lives, and we want to make it convenient for people to exercise what is a fundamental right and have them, you know, and allow people to, you know, to hold politicians accountable. Government is responsive when people show up and express their views, and the way we express those in Oregon is through votes. Oregon was the first state in the country to move to a vote-at-home model. And I say vote-at-home because while people typically say vote by mail, it doesn't have to be by mail. You can vote on your own time with whatever resources you want, consult your friends, your neighbors, your family, and return your ballot at your convenience. In fact, I've joked at that same meeting of other secretaries of state that we were talking about earlier, sometimes people were asking me, you know, what about this vote by mail? And I joked with them and said, we don't call it that in Oregon. We just call it voting because we've done it for so long. People really like it. It doesn't cost people a day of work or the increased expense of childcare. You can fit it into your complicated life. And what's better than that? At the same time, we've done such a good job of adding the security measures to make sure that signatures match, that paper ballots allow for audits of votes. I end my little time on the soapbox in this question with what you said. I think we are a national model, and there are lots of states who consult with us about how to do this well.
Well, tell me about turnout. How's that going?
Well, we are consistently amongst the national leaders, but as much as I am proud of that and excited by that, I am also focused on the number of people who choose not to vote, because as convenient and as secure as we make it, it is still something that people have to choose to do. So we have work to do, I think, and candidates always have work to do to make sure that they're appealing to voters, that voters see the effect of their vote. And the best way we pay that off is to remind people, voters, that when you vote, it's more likely government will do what you want. You don't get what you want by sitting on the sidelines. And, you know, the experiences of filling out your ballot, of knowing that it was returned, of getting the message from the county that your ballot was accepted and it will be counted, I think gives people a sense that they have a stake in the outcome. And then helping people stay engaged past the election so that they can continue to let the people who represent them know what they think, know their preferences, know the choices they prefer. This is an ongoing thing, and we like to say here that, you know, every year is an election year. It's somewhere in the process. We're always about making sure that people have access to that fundamental American right and that they have the opportunity to hold their politicians accountable.
I appreciate you saying that. One of the things I want to get into, and I want to be transparent about this issue of voter education, because I think that goes to voter turnout and the way we participate in our elections. And I want to just take a minute, if I can, to set up the next question with some background, if that's okay with you.
Sure, of course.
So the right for all citizens to vote is enshrined in the Constitution, right?
Yes.
But the nation was originally established as a whites-only national citizenry in 1776. And it wasn't until after the Civil War in 1868 that black people were transformed into black American citizens with a 14th Amendment. And in 1870, a 15th Amendment gave black men the right to vote, but it took another 50 years before the 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote in 1920. So I don't think it's a controversy or a controversial statement to acknowledge that conservative-minded white men in both political parties have fought against the rights of black Americans to vote throughout the late 19th and the entire 20th century. And we inherited those societal conditions and those same battles. And now, since the demographic shifts in this country have become apparent in the 21st century, which is largely due to immigration from south of the border, nefarious efforts to meddle with the access to the ballot box, which never stopped throughout the 20th century, have now expanded and escalated nationwide with a focus on non-white immigrants. So this issue of race in America's elections isn't new. From gerrymandering of voting maps, tinkering with voting places, leveraging political power to limit who has access to vote, race has always been a key component in American elections. But the framing of the issue of elections across the country by educators and media and political leaders have failed to focus on the historical context of race and the ideology of white supremacy, which seems evident in our elections and in these executive orders and in the efforts that's ongoing right now to limit and constrain and restrict people's access to vote. So how can your office be instrumental in providing the public in Oregon with an education and a full understanding of the political dynamics around the issue of elections in our society today through an informed lens of historical context?
Mike, I really appreciate the way you set that all up, because I think it's both insightful and important for people to understand that history. You are right. We've never gotten where we want to go, I think most of us, with the perfect union, but we're trying to get there. We're trying to improve. And you're right, that undercurrent has always been there, sometimes more visible, sometimes less visible. And now it is more out in the open, but our commitment, I think, in this office has always got to be building a system that earns the trust of people in Oregon, of citizens, of voters, of observers. It is not an especially fast or scalable process, for example, but I have had pretty good success in talking with people about the processes that the county clerks across the state engage in. This is the other not-so-secret reality, that elections are conducted by county clerks and elections directors in Oregon's 36 counties. They are the ones who print the ballots, who collect them, who make sure that they are accurately counted. And when people have an opportunity to follow the path of a ballot, to do a ballot ride-along in some sense, they often feel more confident. They are often more willing to talk about what they saw with people and to fight against that misinformation and disinformation about what goes on in the process of elections. That is a good defense. You know, often the best defense is a good offense. So we're gonna stay vigilant and proactive and energetic on all of those sorts of things. And slightly broader than the way you asked the question, we have work to do to earn the confidence of voters and citizens more generally. The Secretary of State is also the state auditor for government. As an independently elected person, our office gets to follow state money to make sure that dollars are being used as they should, that programs are efficient, effective, appropriate. And so I think both of those factors, among others probably too, and play a really important role in helping Oregonians understand the historical context, the challenges that we're facing, the places we're coming up short, where we can do better, both on access to the ballot and on general service to Oregonians. In the end, what I hope we're doing is offering encouragement and support for people who have been disenfranchised, who have felt left out, to participate and know that their votes and their participation not only matter, but are essential to us being the state that we should be.
My guest is Oregon's Secretary of State Tobias Reid. We're talking about the process of elections in Oregon and the impact of federal policies. Secretary Reid, I live in Southern Oregon, and I have firsthand knowledge of the fact that there are schools in this region that teach students social studies, civics, and history through a lens of manifest destiny and white supremacy. Now, these students are going to grow into adults with the same mindset as previous generations, which will ultimately sustain these battles over who has access to the ballot box and the political power of the state and the country. So even when I look around the country, the Oklahoma Superintendent of Public Schools is now requiring all schools in that state to teach students Trump's election conspiracy as fact. So how is your office ensuring that what is being taught about state and federal elections in the schools in this state is accurate, factual, and empowering youth to participate in the election process when they turn 18?
Well, there's, I guess, a number of answers to that. It's a smart question. The places where we have direct authority and responsibility, we're making the facts really clear. The Oregon Blue Book that we publish, that's the almanac, the handbook for Oregon government, is based on fact, is an important resource. We have a program that we run with fifth graders across the state, the Oregon Kid Governor, where fifth graders present their platforms and run and then serve a term with a cabinet and make real progress on issues that matter to them. And beyond that, I sit on the as a non-voting member on the State Board of Education, where I make that case for participatory democracy and making sure that our stories and facts are accurate. And I'd like to engage with legislators who have the opportunity to pass a statute that the 197 school districts and school boards around the country, around the state, have to follow. The point I think that we have to just remind people is that when we have these disagreements, the place to make them clear is in elections. And again, to bring back your good observation to what's happening right now, there are school board races happening. So there is a chance for people to express their preferences and make sure that the people who are making those decisions for how public schools in Oregon are run, you get to have that say right now. Your ballots are likely in your hands. They're due back in a week. And don't sit it out, because the stakes, as you just articulated, are high.
Well, we're running out of time, so I saved my biggest question for last.
Okay.
Some folks are saying we're experiencing a constitutional crisis, and the president is ignoring court orders. He's had a judge arrested, and most recently, the mayor of Newark was arrested. Students are being snatched off campus. Some American citizens are being disappeared. And the constitutional law requiring due process is being regarded by this administration as merely a suggestion. And Congress is either supportive or powerless. There's real fear spreading across this country, Secretary Reid. And yep. Trump has introduced the idea that we may be nearing an end to the election process as we know it. So what can states do to safeguard elections from an administration that is seemingly above the law?
The first and most important thing is to show up and vote. And ballots are in people's hands right now. Let's make sure that we are not taking any of that for granted, that we are expressing our opinions by the people that we support, and the questions we answer, bonds and everything else. As much as he doesn't want you to think this, the president cares a whole lot about public opinion. That's why he is spending so much time making these arguments. But we are smart people in Oregon and in this country, and we can see the plain facts for ourselves. We can see what is going on, and we can act accordingly. and hold politicians accountable. It's not just him. It's our members of Congress. It's our state legislators. It's our state leaders. And all of us have those authorities and those responsibilities as voters and as communities. Let's not take any of that for granted. Let's get those ballots in. Let's make sure we continue to communicate with the people who represent us and make our priorities and our concerns really clear. That's how government will be responsive. And again, as much as he doesn't want you to think it, the president cares a lot about this too.
30 seconds. Do you think Oregon's current election process is going to survive this assault?
Yes. We have to be prepared for any kind of disruption to our election system. Sometimes it's a natural disaster. Sometimes it's a human-caused disaster or a policy disaster like the ones that we're seeing now. But we're resilient. We've been doing this. We continue to get better at it, and we will not give up.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you for an insightful conversation.
Thank you.
My guest was Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reid. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.